when I change my thought pattern from thinking about it to just concentrating on something else, it just changes. That part can be instant.
Yes.
Hello, hello, everybody. I am really excited today because I am entering new territory with a lovely guest. I'm sure she is going to be a lovely guest, but we have never spoken before. So this is going to be new ground for me as well as you. This is Art Juice. This is honest, generous, and humorous conversations that will feed your creative soul. And today, very definitely get you thinking. I am Alice Sheridan. Louise is taking a break, and I am joined here by Tamsin Crimmins, who I reached out to on Instagram. I saw some of what she did on Instagram. And you know when you get those little urges that go, ooh, this would be fun. So she got a random message from an unknown, which is often the best way. Tamsin, say hello. Let us know a little bit where you're calling in from. And then we'll talk a little bit more about what you do.
Amazing. Hi, everyone. So I'm calling in from the northeast coast of England on a very rainy for June day. And I'm so, so, so happy to be here with you all.
You've just had a lovely holiday, which looked fantastic. I'm sure everybody's envious of that. That resets things nicely, doesn't it?
Oh, it really does. It really does. We need those breaks. On the break, I was like, what is the point of holidays? I don't get this. And then when I came back, I was like, oh my God, I have so much energy to do everything I need to do. Holidays are great.
They're such a good filter system. I always find they're such a brilliant filter system. Now, on your website, what it says is trauma-informed, I don't know what any of this means, by the way, trauma-informed somatic coaching for female entrepreneurs, coaches and healers ready to take up space, be seen and receive all the riches of pleasure-based business. Now, that sounds like some of that blurb that you've worked really hard to get contained, like everything you do, because it sounds like it's something that has quite squidgy edges.
Oh, yeah.
Just tell us a little bit about how you work.
Yes. So I'm a somatic coach, which just really means body-based. My approach, some people work through the subconscious, some people work through habits and limiting beliefs and all those sorts of different things. And I work with my clients to listen through the body, what's going on. Because so often when we're running businesses or when we're trying to put any of our gorgeous work out into the world, it sounds like, oh yeah, sure, I'm going to put this out. It's going to be great. And then I think we all, every single one of us, because we're humans, experience what some people might call resistance. Some people might call it blocks. Some people might just be like, I had to take a nap. It's really weird. I was going to do this thing. And then I just couldn't get off the sofa. I don't know what's going on. And so the way I work with people is to go underneath and find those parts of us that are feeling a bit wobbly and listen to them and work with them so that we can move forward. And it's very interesting because my approach is very slow. It's so interesting because actually when we really slow down and listen to the body, which we're not really used to doing in our culture, we actually get to speed up and move forward with the things that we want to do. So that's how I work with mainly business owners, entrepreneurs, coaches, healers, to help them actually move forward in the way that feels good.
Okay, now you guys listening, you've gone from who is this what to, oh, I get it now. Okay, yeah, I totally recognize that and how that can be helpful because I think we all feel that. So we're going to be talking today about how we can access some of these parts of ourselves, what maybe things we should be looking out for that might be, I'm guessing you probably don't like expressions like red flags, but I think they can be quite helpful as signpostings, like when we notice this, but the first step is noticing them. But before we get into that, question that we always have, what does a usual week look like for you?
Oh, I love this question. So good. I'm always so nosy about how people spend their time. So I am one of those people who really likes a slow, spacious working week. If I have a lot of stuff in my schedule, that's not a good week. I can start to feel like, oh, not sure about that. So my usual weeks, I'm at home, I'm with my partner, we live by the sea, I like going for lots of walks. I like having a very slow morning routine. I don't have babies yet. I hope to. And I know that all of this is going to go out the window when that happens. But I have a very luxurious 3-hour morning practice.
Oh, my Lord.
Yeah. It might be a bit of embodiment, a bit of yoga. I'm a mad journaler. I'm obsessed with journaling.
Yeah.
Lots of just practices to get me into the groove, get me connected with my vision before I might go and, you know, have client calls. I mainly work one-on-one, but I also have some group containers that I offer throughout the year. So I might be creating content or doing calls with lots of breaks, lots and lots and lots of breaks. And because that's what my nervous system needs. I just really, you know, the fast-paced, busy scheduled life is not the life for me. And I, like many people, probably had to discover that by doing the things and being like, I don't like this. This doesn't feel good. This was meant to feel good and it doesn't.
Okay, I was going to ask that because I think that's one of the reasons why I'm so interested in this field is that, okay, first of all, I'm envious of your morning routine. I remember when I first wanted to come back to art and I bought The Artist's Way and I really didn't get very far in it because she said you have to sit and write all this stuff before you get going with your day. And I'm like, I've got small kids, I'm sleep deprived, I'm not adding that into my morning.
Yeah.
That is not going to suit me right now. Now I can see the purpose in it, but you definitely have to be within that space. But I think one of the reasons that I'm interested in these elements is because I very definitely hit up against that wall, which, you know, for me was depression. It doesn't have to be for everybody when things were not going right for whatever reasons. And I just wonder, how did you get into working this way? What was your previous work background? And did you come to this by a similar kind of uh-oh realization?
That's such a good question. I think it's such a common theme for so many people is like, okay, this something's not working in my life and it's showing up in symptoms that says something's not right here. I did the London journalism thing for a couple of years.
Yeah.
Red carpets, glamorous award ceremonies, celebrities, big interviews, you know, deadlines, all that stuff. Very exciting, but very anxiety inducing for me. And I reacted to that in quite an extreme way in that after a couple of years was like, this is so empty and unfulfilling. And so I'm going to run off to India and spend a couple of months there, and I ended up spending a year there. And I was in the south of India, which is the like shanti shanti, peace, peace, peace area of India. And the pace there could not be slower if it tried. It's so like lazy, actually, because it's so hot. You've just got to move slowly. That suited me, hence why I stayed a long time. Did a lot of, you know, healing work there to kind of understanding who I am and, you know, what was going on. And that's where I kind of started on the path of somatic modalities, getting into my body, yoga mainly. But it was, you know, a little bit too slow. And actually what I discovered when I came back to the UK, it was very, very, very rocky. It wasn't like I discovered this quickly at all. It took many years to find a rhythm that actually suited me. But when I say the word rhythm, I really, really do mean it, because for me, it was discovering a rhythm of the place that I live. I live in the northeast of England. You know, there's a lot of weather. There's a lot of seasonal change. And for me, it was about coming into a rhythm with my environment, with my body, that actually serves me. And, you know, I've never looked back.
It's really funny because this idea of rhythm is something that I've kind of come back to more and more. I have quite a strong drive in many regards. And I think actually, you know, the pace of things changes as you go through life, as you have different stages of life. But I think one of the things that's interesting about rhythm and pace is the kind of different time spans of it. So you've mentioned seasons, weather. I noticed that quite early on. There are certain things I feel like doing in the winter that I don't want to do in the summer and vice versa. sometimes to do with the heat, sometimes to do with the weather and being outside, but also to do with me. Sometimes in the winter, you know, I go into kind of hibernation, internal withdrawing mode, and it's looking for that, noticing those kind of things, as well as what happens on a daily basis and a monthly basis for women in particular.
For sure. For sure. Yeah. And I love that you're noticing that. It's living in harmony with your environment and with what your body is calling for, because our bodies are so intricately mapped with the seasons of the earth. We're all going through these. I mean, there are huge life seasons, of course, the transitions of motherhood and, you know, grief and all these different stages of our lives, but we're so often living at odds with it. And we think, why can't I be that? You know, you mentioned the word driven. Why can't I be this driven all the time? You know, why can't I like push and hustle and get the sales and, you know, make the work and do the thing? There's a lot of pressure to be on that mode, that sort of what I would call, you know, it's the internal or eternal summer, the heat, the kind of the peak of the season when we're at our highest energy, or the peak of ovulation when we have our most outward kind of confident, sociable aspects of ourselves. But the truth of the matter is, we're not meant to be there all of the time. And there's so much goodness to be found in all the other phases. And I love what you say about winter. It's such a good time for cocooning, going in, slowing down. But that's difficult to do in our culture.
It is. I wonder where it comes from. Is it too simplistic to say that it goes back to, you know, industrial revolution, factory driven time, you know, those kind of systemized time slots? Because I know from looking at sleep stuff in the past that if you go right back to like 1600s and medieval times, it was perfectly normal for people to wander around in the middle of the night when they weren't sleeping and having chats with their neighbors. Seriously. If we don't sleep, if we're awake at 2 o'clock, it's a problem, because actually once the day starts, it's difficult to catch up with that rest at another point.
Yeah, you've got to get to work. I think it's 100%, I would say, patriarchy, capitalism. It's when we're at that peak energy, when we're at our most fertile and our most out there, confident, doing the things, it's really, really, really good for making money, being super productive, being, you know, sexually available, all of those pieces. I'm speaking for women here, because men have a totally different rhythm. Like, they don't have that cyclical rhythm that we do. So I think a lot of it is us kind of having been shoehorned into a totally different rhythm that does not suit us. But I haven't heard that about the medieval walks in the night. I did read a really, really gorgeous book that you might enjoy called Wintering. Last winter, actually, and it was so nourishing. And she talked a lot about different approaches to, you know, the darkness in different places in the world. And there was that idea that back in the day, people would sleep, you know, when it gets dark in the winter, it's dark really, really, really early. You have your first sleep, and then you might get up in the night and go and do some painting or something like that, and then for a couple of hours, and then go back to sleep until the sun rises, which I think is a rather charming idea that probably wouldn't work for a lot of people's schedules.
So what's the first part of this then? Is it usually when people notice and they get those issues of something isn't working for me, I feel tired, I feel like, I guess this comes up, I feel like I'm failing because there are things I think I should be doing and somehow I just don't feel I'm capable of it, therefore there must be something wrong with me?
Yeah.
I guess that's a biggie, right?
Yeah, you've nailed it. It's the symptoms.
I wonder how I possibly recognize that.
I mean, it shows up differently for everybody, right?
Yeah.
And the range of symptoms that can show up can vary massively. You know, it can be from mild frustration to anger to, you know, that I can't really get out of bed, I'm very shut down. And within the understanding of the nervous system, all of those responses make sense. This is the most wonderful thing, because so many of us are laboring under this illusion that there's something wrong with us.
Yeah.
You know, how come they can do it and I can't? Or how come I actually did reach this milestone, but I don't feel good about it? How come, you know, I'm able to make some progress, but then I almost feel like I'm going backwards. Like, what is going on? What is wrong with me? And the wonderful thing about the nervous system and understanding those different states is we can understand that when we are people, I mean, anybody, but particularly artists, entrepreneurs, people who are putting out their creations into the world, or even actually starting to create the thing, never mind putting it out into the world. I work a lot with visibility and selling and marketing and that sort of thing. But actually even the wanting, having that urge to be creative or, you know, put something into the world, there are parts of us that if they do not feel safe with that, based on evidence from the past, and there's so much, I mean, I'm not an expert in this part at all, but it, you know, the kind of generational stuff that we're just starting to understand now, but even just in our own lives, and I'm sure for many people you work with, there are wounds and little things that happened in childhood.
Yeah,
you know,
little barbs.
The grading of artwork. I've got some big creative wounds, you know, that just feel like in my body, feel like they are happening now. It's not like I was, you know, it's in the past. And that's the incredible thing about the body, is that it doesn't know time. So if something has happened in the past, your body is going to be scanning the environment and going, this reminds me of that thing that happened. Okay, right. We need to stop this from moving forward. We need to shut this down. How can we shut this down? How can we come to the aid of our amazing human? And
because I recognize that the last time there was something like this, or that I recognized like this, it felt crap.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. Okay. Exactly. It was either dangerous or highly stressful, or, you know, any kind of shade of that. And it will say, we don't want that to happen again. So we're going to come to your rescue in the form of dysregulation, which again has many, which simply means that your nervous system is reacting to a real or perceived threat in the environment. Even though we might be saying, but I'm just trying to paint. All I want to do is write a chapter. This isn't dangerous. Come on. Like, let's just do this. We can't logically talk our way out of that. Our bodies speak a totally different language, and they need to be shown that they're safe. So when dysregulation shows up in the form of frustration, anger, it could come up in so many different ways, anxiety, or all the way up
procrastinating.
All of that good stuff. Or complete shutdown. You know, I can't do this thing. It's our job, instead of saying, oh my God, there's something wrong with me, it's our job to go, okay, interesting. Dysregulation is here. How can I show my system via somatic tools that I'm actually safe to move forward?
Okay, so is it a little bit like, I think we can all recognize these things. And, well, I say that. I think there is a stage where you don't recognize it, where you kind of, you carry on regardless.
Yes.
Definitely a stage of that. But even once you recognize it, what we're saying is that this is held, you can't think your way out of it. Are you saying that there are kind of bodily things that you can do that like reset physiologically how your body operates? And is that quick? Does that happen over time? Like, is it something, I mean, I'm thinking of things like breathing.
Good old breathing. Definitely. Yeah, this is such a good question. Does it happen quickly? How long does it take?
Yeah.
Are there body-based tools we can use? Answer is yes to all of them, actually.
Okay.
We can make changes in our autonomic state, in our nervous system, really, really quickly. And we can, every tiny little step that we take, if you imagine, say you're trying to go towards creating a new piece of art, and there's something that dysregulation is showing up, and you're so right about actually noticing that. That is a huge part of the puzzle, is the noticing and figuring out what's going on. Because actually our mind is not really functioning the way it normally is when it's regulated. When we're in those states really just want us to keep us there. So it's not a kind of super rational, like, this is so easy, I'm dysregulated, no problem, I'll just do a somatic tool and move through this. Once we practice, it can become a little bit more like that. But there is no small step. Every single time we say, get the brushes out and want to move towards it, notice dysregulation there. Let's say we stop and breathe, you know.
Which could even be just like a rising feeling of anxiety or just worry. Or yes. It doesn't even have to be like a big label anxiety. It's just that. Ooh.
Oh, my goodness. Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yes, yes, yes. You could notice that your breath has changed. You might notice that your palms are sweaty. You might notice that your thoughts have suddenly become really unhelpful, saying you shouldn't even bother doing this. This is going to be rubbish. You're never going to be as good as so-and-so. You're starting too late. You know, all those super unhelpful thoughts. This is our cue. Okay, interesting. How can I show my system that it's going to be okay? We're just going to do a little bit of this thing. I'm keeping us safe. Say, for example, you then take some breaths and you notice that feeling has just quelled just a little bit.
Mm.
So that is incredible. That's a huge step towards healing. It's a huge step. So it doesn't need to be massive for actually to have a huge impact. And when we add all those tiny little steps, every single time we come back into regulation and we have disconfirming experiences for our body and show our system, we are safe in the here and now. This is, I've got us. Next time it gets easier and easier and easier and easier. But the opposite of that is what you talked about, the pushing through, ignoring it.
Mm.
That's when we're storing up problems for ourselves. Whereas when we can address it, each and tiny, tiny, tiny steps, and I really emphasize tiny, that's when we can actually start to move forward at a faster pace.
And I think there is a kind of magic as well in recognizing that you do have the power to do that. And when I say that, I don't mean that it's easy to do and that you can always do it. I just mean that in those moments when you're aware of it, you think, oh, that really changed. Well, what do you know? Yeah. And I'm thinking of like that I'm trying to do running, not because I want to be a runner, just because I think it's a nice feeling of freedom. I'm rubbish at running. I have always been rubbish at running at school. It would not be my top of list of things to do, but I was getting better at it and really beginning to enjoy it. Then I got ill and I had to stop. And yesterday I went out for the first time and I thought, right, I'm going with no expectations. Think I might cough all the way through. Who knows what happens? And then actually halfway through, I was just hitting that part of thinking, oh, this is starting to feel hard. This is starting to feel hard. I don't know if I can do this or if I want to. And I just thought, just think about your breathing. Just think about coming in and out. And then all of a sudden she was saying, okay, that's the end. You can stop now. And I was like, oh, well, there you go. That wasn't quite so bad, was it? But there was a definite moment of thinking, when I change my thought pattern from thinking about it to just concentrating on something else, it just changes. That part can be instant.
Yes. That is such a good example, because when you're running, you're really present with your body.
Yeah.
You're really feeling the sensations in your body. You're noticing what's coming up. You're noticing your breath, your lungs, your feet, your legs. And what you're describing is a moment of presence, of pure presence with yourself and being able to be with the breath. And this is how we know that we are, we're able to kind of expand that capacity when we're not trying to escape the moment, but actually being with it as much as we can tolerate. And it sounds like it was an amount that you could tolerate.
Yeah.
Perhaps if it had gone on any longer, it would have been a sign to, okay, that's enough now. But then you knew it was the end. So it's these little magical, magical moments. We build them on top of each other. Oh my goodness. This is where our capacity to run longer, create more, put ourselves out there, raise our prices, whatever it might be. We build it with these every single moment of presence that we have. I love that example.
So the key to this then is not necessarily, even though you do it, or is it? I don't know. Is the key to this you know, a big fabulous morning practice. I don't know, whatever the miracle is, miracle morning, millionaire morning. I don't know, whatever it is. I know that I just looked at it and thought, I ain't doing that. That, because for me, that sounds like a commitment. And it's a funny thing, that, because I think there is a level of commitment that we have to choose to ourself and to our own growth and development. And I think whatever you're doing creatively, actually, that's the reason you're doing it, because you want to go somewhere new. And that takes a little bit of hand in hand work with all of this other stuff. The thing for me, though, is always balancing that, what is a routine and when does it become boring? And maybe that's just because I haven't yet found one that I feel fully serves me. And also, I think I've got better at allowing that flexibility for seasons. Like, sometimes I like doing this in the morning and sometimes I don't have to, and that's okay.
Yeah, beautiful.
What's your recommendation for people to, if they're like, oh, yeah, okay, well, this sounds great, but what do I actually do?
Oh, yeah. You definitely don't need a 3-hour morning ritual. No. 100% not. You get to, you know, it is as simple as, well, it's as simple and as complicated. I don't want to make this sound like it's easy at all, because so many of us are moving through the world not in a lot of communication with our bodies and what's going on. Down to the simplest, ignoring cues for water, food, sleep, rest, these sorts of things, and pushing through. So the ask to start paying attention to what's going on in your, I call it befriending the nervous system, befriending the body, because that's really what it is. It's about coming into relationship with what's happening there, and learning to speak its language, learning to recognize what's going on. And that is that's all day, every day. Sometimes I've said my full-time job is regulating my nervous system. That's the number one priority that I have in my life, because it makes my relationships better. It impacts how much I exercise, how much I eat, what I do in my work. It really, really, really comes first. And that's not to say that it's the 3-hour morning ritual. It's in every moment, it's checking in.
Okay.
Because to be honest with you, before I found or deepened into this work, I spent my entire time, my whole life, bouncing around between depression, anxiety, what I called them then. Now I just call that dysregulation.
Yeah, different sort of states of stress, I guess.
Exactly. Yeah, different states in your nervous system. And of course they have different flavors, exactly.
Yeah.
And different severities. And I never knew what was going on. And now I can understand what's happening. And it's like you said, it's so empowering to understand, okay, there's a part of me that is feeling scared right now and it's showing up in this way. How can I turn towards myself instead of escaping myself and this moment via, you know, goodness gracious, all of the things, you know.
Yeah.
For me, it used to be smoking, drinking, smoking pot, eating, watching TV, all of the things.
Scrolling social.
100%.
Yeah.
Just to escape that discomfort that's there. And the you know, every single tiny step. And it really is a daily practice. And some of it is actually just an education piece of getting to know our systems and what's happening there.
Yeah. I mean, the artists talk about being in flow, which is, you know, a beautiful thing when it happens. There is a magic to that as well. But that's essentially what we're talking about, aren't we? Being able to not control it. It's not like, bam, here it goes. Now this is going to happen. That's my expectation. But it's almost like it's just looking after yourself enough so that you are in that space where this is more likely to flow from you. Like, and I feel it too. Sometimes, you know, I have, you know, a million decisions. Like, oh, I could do this. I could do that. I could do that. You know, all of them. And that's all a little bit crazy. And yet when I'm in the space where something feels right, when I can do it and it feels right, I have the energy for that.
Yes.
when I don't have the energy for something, there is something about it that is not suiting me right now.
Yes.
So building that flexibility into the way that I do things has been something that has been massively key over the last few years, because I know I can be a strong driver, but I also know it doesn't always suit me. And I know that if I wait a little until I feel that, oh yeah, that sounds really cool, let's do it like this, then it kind of goes a little bit more easy. That's what we're looking for, aren't we? A little bit more ease.
Yes, 100%. And yeah. I love that you mentioned this word flow, because to me, whenever I've experienced that, you know, there's no anxiety present. There's no shutdown present. There's none.
You don't have to overcome anything in order to be in that place. No.
It's presence, right? We're really, really, really present. And for me, that is about being regulated. And to go even deeper than that, what I would say about having this place where we feel safe, we're not in survival mode, we are feeling safe and present. This for me is where the soul can speak, where spirit can come through, you know, if that's your jam. And that to me is when I know I'm really in flow, because it's actually not really me doing the thing. Yeah. But I'm no longer kind of blocking it by being in this survival state. So it's 100% so useful. I think there's a lot of negative ideas out there that you have to be kind of depressed to be an artist or to create or any of those things. And I would completely argue against that. And actually, our best work comes through when we are feeling really safe to let it come through us.
Yeah. And one of the things that led me to kind of reach out for you, I don't know if it's something that you talk about all the time, but certainly at the time you were talking, you know, a lot about pleasure-based business and doing things from a point of pleasure. And I think sometimes we've talked about this before, as women, as people who take care of others, we have quite a strong propensity, if we're not careful, to not put ourselves first. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't necessarily mean, it can do, you know, those bodily things, you know, making sure you have an early night, having a hot bath, looking after yourself, you know, all of that could go for a facial, whatever feels good. But I think a lot of it for me just comes from recognizing that ability to make decisions that feel good to you.
Yes.
Even if that's a tiny little thing, like, you know, what do I feel like having for lunch today? Tuning into those things rather than, you know, just, well, I should have the leftovers because that's what's in the fridge.
Yeah. Yeah. I love this. I feel like this is the light bulb for so many people of, I wonder what my life would be like if I just did things that felt registered as good to my system. Yeah. Like I genuinely felt.
Shouldn't be hard, should it?
No, it shouldn't, but it is. Mm-hmm. It definitely, definitely is. We live in a very fight, flight, survival-based culture. You know, a lot of us are very, very, very conditioned to be on the go all of the time and making things happen. So coming down from that and actually engaging in the body, slowing down enough to ask the question, what would I actually like? What would feel good to me? And also just to be, you know, really honest, I do feel like when women are able to connect with our bodies and be really clear on our yes and our no, a lot of things change. A lot of things change. When you can no longer tolerate doing stuff that doesn't feel good, there's going to be a lot of people they're not going to like that particularly. So it's quite a rebellion and a revolution, particularly for women, but for everybody, really for everybody, for us to come into our bodies and ask those simple questions. And we can do it. We can just dip in just a little bit. It's not like, okay, tomorrow I'm going to be 100% embodied and present all day long. It's too much. Yeah. But in those moments of sinking into that hot water in the bath and actually feeling what it feels like to be there, that's so important. These are not, I know they can be dismissed sometimes, but actually those little acts when we're present for them builds up this understanding with our bodies. Like, I'm here, I'm listening, let's do this together, rather than, you know, punishing ourselves, like,
yeah,
whatever we think we should be doing.
I'm thinking it comes back to sort of paying attention and actually, you know, that's that awareness. I'm just wondering here that for artists and creative people, there is a lot of awareness that goes from, I always talk about it as gathering, like noticing external things, visual things, you know, that's an important part of it. But we're also talking here about not just attention to those outside things, but attention to you. Gathering what information you have already within you.
Yes.
And it's just, I wonder if this is a new thing, and I know we've talked about small moments. So the first thing is registering those small moments during the day. But I do also think that maybe there is a stage where you have to give yourself perhaps some clear parameters of something that you are going to do as a habit. I am going to go and buy myself a coffee rather than make one at home, because that means I sit in a coffee. And this is an interesting one for me, because this sounds like it should be a treat, but I actually realize I don't like sitting in coffee shops where it's noisy and there's lots of other people's stuff. That doesn't feel like a treat for me.
Yeah.
Going and buying a cake and having it at home in my garden, that pistachio eclair that they sell on the corner, that's a treat. That's much more of a treat than going and having it in the coffee shop.
Ooh, love it.
They are good. They are really good. I've got a thing about pistachios at the moment. Pistachio eclairs and pistachio frozen mochi. Absolute.
Oh, my God.
Lovely, lovely little... Lovely,
that sounds so good. Yes,
they are good.
Such pleasure to go to the shop, pick out the eclair you want, take it back and sit in the garden, hear the sounds of the birds, the sun on your face, or the breeze on your skin. Oh my goodness, yes, these moments, this is it for me. This is living, you know. it is what is the rest of the stuff? I don't know. It's being able to be present and feeling alive and safe in the moment. Oh my goodness, what a gift. I love that. And there are so many ways that we can take that kind of pleasure, that kind of presence, and we can bring it into our work, you know.
Okay, so we're talking about kind of starting gently. I know that you work with women on a much deeper level. So you do quite a lot, like you said, of one-to-one. So that's people who really want to dive into this in quite, is it exposing?
It's vulnerable. It's vulnerable. Yeah. But as I say, we go at a real slow pace.
So is Instagram a good place for people to find you?
Yes, definitely. Okay. Come and find me there. I share a lot more about all this body-based business stuff there.
Okay, so and your Instagram handle is Tamsin Crimmins. I would say that if some of this stuff is new, there might be some of the things that you encourage women to do that for some people will be perhaps a little bit confrontational if we're not used to paying attention to how we feel and body and focus and pleasure and all of that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Go gently with it. You know, whenever I've discovered these sort of new ways of thinking about things, I notice that often there is a lot of resistance in me at first. I'm quite, I'm not really sure where this is going and I need to understand why, and you need to prove this to me first. And it takes me quite a lot of time to kind of soften into, you're right all along.
Yeah, I love that. I love that you're listening to the part of you that's saying, I need evidence, I need to see that this works, I need to build trust, and you're giving yourself the time to do that. How gorgeous. We don't have to, there is no requirement that we jump headfirst into healing modalities. We can take it so slow and gentle. It sounds like you're being really kind to the part of you that has concerns, and I love that.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of quite like it. It just kind of tickles me a little bit now that I know that that's how I operate. But I think that, you know, that's where social media can be so good, you know, even these days where we don't see everything, is that every so often you do get a little drop of something juicy and you think, oh yeah, and often it is the thing that you needed to hear today, and it gradually kind of seeps into you and just changes the way you think about things.
Yeah.
If somebody wants to go and find out more, your website is tamsincrimmins.co.uk. What do you have for people that they can access?
Well, I have a lovely freebie, which is yes, I do. It's a Creatrix activation. Actually, it's perfect for your people.
Hang on, what's a Creatrix? You can't just drop words like Creatrix activations in and expect us to know what you're talking about. What do you mean?
What do you think a Creatrix is?
Okay, good question. I think a Creatrix, it sounds quite exciting. It sounds a bit like a witchy generating magic type thing, but it also sounds a little bit scary. Like I might have to, I say scary, but I'm smiling, aren't I? it's a scary, excited kind of smile. Like I might have to do something that I'm not used to and access a different part of me. That sounds quite good.
There you go. You've got it in one.
Yeah. All right.
Basically, I use the word creatrix to talk about the creative feminine power within us. And the freebie is an audio practice that connects you with your womb creativity. So it's not for everybody. Some people are like, that's so weird. Who the hell are you? But I'm for the people who are like, ooh, tell me more. So yeah, you can totally access that on my website. And the next piece of that creatrix journey is starting to access the wealth creatrix within us, because we have this phenomenal power within us to create human life, to create beauty, and also to create wealth and abundance.
Yeah, guys listening, sorry.
You can try it. You can try tapping into the energy in that part of your body. Why not?
Yeah, no, I don't, I'm only joking, really. We love you too. It's just very funny. Okay, that sounds fantastic. So people can go over and do that. I'm sure that this is a conversation that we might take further another time. I've certainly enjoyed watching and seeing what you do. And like I said, I don't even know how I found you on Instagram. That's the magic, isn't it?
It is the magic.
That's the bit. It's just, you know, one of those things that pops up and you think, ooh, and it's that spark. Ooh, something in that. Don't know what it is yet for me, but there's something.
This is the future, in my opinion, of leadership and business. It's nervous system based. It's really, imagine a world where we're all operating from a really regulated, connected, present place. That is so, so, so possible when we, you know, befriend our nervous systems.
Yeah, I think, you have more faith in that than I do in terms of big scale operations.
Oh,
but
yes.
For lots of us, we're not working in those situations, scenarios. So we do have the ability to do it for ourselves much more. And I think, you know, where there is a space, where there is allowance for that, like my daughter came home and she said to me the other day, she said, it's not really fair, is it, that boys have, you know, GCSEs. And she said, I could be doing my GCSEs and my A-levels and be having terrible stomach cramps. And there is no allowance made for that. And
yes,
it doesn't seem fair, actually, that we have no allowance for these, you know, different ways that we feel. I think things are getting better.
Yeah. And we are the revolution. Yeah. We really are. Every single person who says we're doing it a different way, we're creating a new path.
Yeah.
This is how we make change.
Yeah.
I know what you mean about the faith on the global scale, but all we can do is our own little individual bit and
true.
Then spread the good
word.
And
I think, sometimes it's saying yes to something and sometimes it's saying no to things as well, isn't it?
Sure.
I think that's another important part of it. Brilliant. Thank you so much. Okay. So to round up, have you got one thing that you've done this week then? Usually it's what's inspired you. I'm going to change it this week. What's brought you most pleasure this week?
Yes, I'm just going to be so cheesy, but the most pleasure I have received this week has been from nature. It's really been from the sun on my face and the air and the warmth in the air and the feeling of the ground underneath my feet. It's just such a medicine for me to spend as much time as I possibly can in nature. It's where all my best ideas come from.
Nature is full of it at the moment.
Oh, big, it really is.
Big, blousy, smelly roses dropping petals. Lush. I mean, it's like big, fat, buzzy bees everywhere. It is really the season for it, isn't it? Although, actually, I quite like autumn too, but there we go.
Yeah. There's joy in all of them. It's just different flavours. But, yeah, the summer, I love this time of full bloom. It's gorgeous. Yeah.
So abundant. Taking time, not to rush, go and enjoy it.
Yes.
That is wonderful. It has been lovely talking to you. And we will put all those, you know, all the links and the notes and everything in the show notes so that you can, wherever you're listening on your phone, swipe, click, do all of those things if you want to find out more. So there we go. That was a lovely little kind of change from the normal, wasn't it, everyone? We will see you again next week. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Little music bit comes in there. A really annoying jingle that came from something free and now is all over TikTok videos. And everyone's like, you can't change it on the podcast. Whenever I see it on TikTok, I'm like,
oh, TikTok.